This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
As the fighting rages on in parts of Sudan, our humanitarian operations in the country are virtually impossible at a time when a third of the country is in desperate need of assistance.
That was Brenda Kariuki, the World Food Program's Senior Regional Communication Officer in Eastern Africa, on the agency's decision to temporarily suspend its operation in Sudan. Details coming up. Also, a group helping with Sudan evacuations describes its frustrations. And Egypt's Antiquities Ministry criticizes casting an African-American actress as Cleopatra in a Netflix film. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. AU Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat yesterday reiterated his call for the Sudanese Army and the Rapid Support Forces, RSF, paramilitary, to immediately agree on a permanent ceasefire and to facilitate the delivery of humanitarian assistance to Sudanese in need. Multiple attempts at a truce since the fighting began on April 15th have fallen apart. Will the African Union's recent call for a ceasefire make any difference? That is the question I posed to Professor Elliot Masote of Devery University.
Yeah, the role of the African Union really is to look into such conflicts in Sudan really before they happened, because conflicts within those two generals have been going on, and the United States, the European Union, sat down with those generals, and they agreed on an agreement to work together. So the African Union, I don't know where it was, and really coming at this point in time with only words when people are suffering, it's definitely not enough. So, but then we cannot say it's too late and nothing can happen at this point in time. We need to take all parties involved, even the United Nations, the EU, the Arab League, the African Union, because, if such things happen, it affects the whole region, it affects the whole continent, it affects the whole world, because we're going to have refugees. Because Sudan is for the Sudanese, Sudan is for all Africans, and then Sudan is for the whole world.
In talking about Sudan, we're dealing with two elements here, Professor. Mr. Faki reiterated his call on the Sudanese army and the rapid support forces to immediately agree on a permanent ceasefire. We are dealing with two individuals. How do you approach this? How can you make sense to these two individuals?
I will approach it in the sense of putting across consequences for not listening to the African Union, for not listening to the United Nations, because just telling somebody that you have to do this without consequences of not doing it, they are not going to stop. They're not going to stop. And this conflict, it has some history in it. It has some history in it, and we're coming a little too late. But I think one thing that can work is, sanctions to be immediately imposed, and then the threat of some type of force to these two generals, that if you are not going to agree on a ceasefire right now, a permanent ceasefire right now, this is going to happen. And then an example must be set. An example must be set so that nothing like that will ever happen again. Because, for these two generals, I don't see them giving in, because of the mistrust between the two of them. So to some extent, I think force should be imposed on these two, generals just to stop whatever they are doing and talk.
The AU very recently actually negotiated a peace treaty between Tigray forces and the Ethiopian government.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. I think the African Union negotiators should be somewhere close to Sudan, maybe in Chad or in Ethiopia, trying to make these generals get out of Sudan to meet somewhere and talk. Okay. Because the war that is going on, nobody is going to win in a war. those generals should understand that. The African Union should understand that nobody will ever win in a war, because you win, but look at the destruction going on. Mm-hmm. Look at the suffering that is going on. So, you know, whoever is going to win, what did you win after killing people? What do you win after destroying the whole country, or, you know, making even the world suffer economically, and all those refugees there? So I think the generals really don't understand that concept, that you would never win anything by keeping on fighting in your own country. Nobody will ever win.
That was Elliot Masote, professor of business at Devery University. He talked with me from the U.S. state of Ohio. Citing security concerns, the World Food Program says it's been forced to temporarily suspend its humanitarian operations in Sudan, which already had food shortages before the current conflict erupted 2 weeks ago. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
WFP says around 15 million people, a third of Sudan's population, already face hunger. With evacuations underway, millions more are dealing with food shortages inside the country and in neighboring South Sudan, where thousands of South Sudanese refugees are fleeing for safety. Brenda Kariuki is WFP's Senior Regional Communication Officer in Eastern Africa. She says WFP had planned to assist 7.6 million Sudanese this year, but she says those plans have been shelved for now because of concerns for the safety of WFP staff.
As the fighting rages on in parts of Sudan, our humanitarian operations in the country are virtually impossible at a time when a third of the country is in desperate need of assistance. We are hearing of acute shortages of food, water, fuel, medicines, and access to healthcare. With this crisis, we are afraid that millions more will plunge into hunger.
The crisis has triggered a huge displacement crisis, with thousands of Sudanese and South Sudanese refugees fleeing to neighboring countries seeking safety and protection. The United Nations reports some 20,000 people have fled to Chad, and at least 4,000 South Sudanese refugees have been returning to their homes of origin in five northern states bordering Sudan. Kariuki says these numbers are expected to increase as the crisis escalates. She notes WFP will be unable to provide aid to needy people inside Sudan as long as the current situation of insecurity persists.
WFP staff, offices and vehicles and equipment and foodstuffs have come in the direct line of fire, and looting of our warehouses continues. To date, we know up to 4,000 metric tons of food meant for vulnerable people has been looted from our warehouses, and at least 10 vehicles and 6 trucks which transport food have been stolen.
She calls this unacceptable, as it takes away humanitarian aid meant for the most vulnerable Sudanese and refugees who desperately need this life-saving food. Among those most in need of humanitarian aid, she says, are the hundreds of thousands of refugees who are sheltering in Sudan. School children who will miss out on their daily meal, malnourished infants, and pregnant and breastfeeding mothers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As the war in Sudan appears to be intensifying again, the Gift of the Givers, a South African-based disaster response organization, is struggling to evacuate foreigners from Sudan. The non-governmental group says one of its buses was refused entry into Egypt because some of the rescued passengers left their passports in Sudan, while others had no valid documents. The lack of electricity, fuel, food, and water have also frustrated the rescue mission. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The founder of Gift of Givers, Imtiaz Suleiman, told the media that 8 South Africans who were being rescued on Tuesday were stranded for 26 hours at the border as they had left their passports behind when they ran for their lives. He says hundreds of migrants are stranded.
The biggest problem is many people don't have passports. And if you don't have passports, it's a nightmare at the border. So there's lots of civilians from lots of countries. All the diplomatic missions are closed. They got no consular support. They don't have passports. They can't get out. There's no bank functioning. There's no money. There's no food. There's no jobs. They need to get out. All governments should look at doing something to get those people out because they are really battling.
Meanwhile, the South African government says the country's air force has already brought back home a number of rescued South Africans. Minister in the Presidency, Kumbuzo Ntshavheni, told a media briefing that her government believes negotiation is the solution, not war.
Cabinet has reiterated a call for an end to hostilities in Sudan and calls for peace and calm among the parties involved in the conflict, in keeping with the African Union objective of silencing the guns on the continent.
The war in Sudan has been sparked by power struggles between two rival generals, leading to hundreds of deaths and thousands displaced. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuso Kumalo.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Nigerian police are investigating the abduction this week of at least 29 people from a village in the territory of the federal capital, Abuja. Officials say gunmen raided Yawuti village, taking victims on foot into the bush, including children. The attack has raised concerns about Nigeria's worsening insecurity just ahead of next month's swearing-in of Bola Tinubu as the new president. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Abuja Police Public Relations Officer Josephine Ade said officials are looking into the matter and would make their findings public soon. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the abductions, but a local council head in Kwali, where the village is located, said the gunmen invaded after midnight Tuesday and shot sporadically before herding residents, including children, into the nearby bush on foot. The attack has raised concerns of growing insecurity in the Nigerian capital nearly 1 year after terror group Islamic State West Africa Province, or ISWAP, claimed responsibility for a jailbreak that freed hundreds of inmates, including high-profile terrorism suspects held at a medium security facility in Abuja. Ade spoke to VOA via phone.
No, abduction is a very sensitive issue. We are on it. When we are done with what we are doing, you will definitely hear from us. Whatever we are doing, we don't put it out there because of the sensitive of the issue.
Abuja has maintained relative peace for years, despite Nigeria struggling to stem a range of insecurity problems, especially in the central, northwestern, and northeastern regions. But since last year, the capital has been reporting incidents more often. Last month, local media reported gunmen invaded an Abuja estate and kidnapped 9 people. Security expert Senator Irebu says the trend is worrying.
It's an unfortunate incident. People are talking about our Nigerians. No Nigerian deserves to be kidnapped. And it still shows that government still has a lot to do. Even within the city center, there are a lot of crime issues.
Despite this, Nigerian authorities say security officials are making substantial progress. Insecurity was a major topic at the February polls in which Bola Ahmed Tinubu was declared winner. Tinubu will be sworn in on May 29th. Irebu says he must take security matters seriously.
Any incoming administration should know that the challenge is still very prevalent. The issue of insecurity, the economy is there, so they have their work well cut out. To be a shift from the way the current administration are doing their things, to improve where they have failed. And one of the areas where they really failed is the issue of security.
In 2015, outgoing President Muhammad Buhari promised to address insecurity if elected president. After years of being widely criticized for security failures, Buhari last week said, quote, "Those that think that I have hurt them so much, please pardon me," end quote. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Egypt's Antiquities Ministry insisted today that Cleopatra had white skin and Hellenistic characteristics in an ongoing dispute over a Netflix drama documentary depicting the famed beauty of antiquity as black. According to the French news agency AFP, the movie Queen Cleopatra, produced by Jada Pinkett Smith and starring African-American actress Adele James, is due for release on the streaming Netflix platform on May 10th. For Mostafa Waziri, head of the Supreme Antiquities Council, depicting the famous queen as black is nothing less than a falsification of Egyptian history. He insists there is nothing racist in this view. Commentators in Egypt often decry campaigns among mostly African-American groups claiming the origins of Egyptian civilization. A BBC documentary in 2009 claimed that Cleopatra had African blood, an assertion that passed without incident. South Africa has the biggest motor vehicle manufacturing industry on the continent, producing an average of more than 500,000 cars a year. Millions of people depend on the sector for their livelihoods. But the many car-making giants that have factories in the country say the local industry could collapse because of ongoing power outages. Darren Taylor reports.
Chief Operations Officer at the Steel and Engineering Industries Federation of Southern Africa, Tafadzwa Chibanguza, says car companies are trying to keep the lines moving using diesel generators, but he says that's doubling their operating costs.
So unfortunately, in the near term, it's pain all around because even the solutions are costly. I do think the incentives around solar will help. But again, we know given the energy availability factors of solar and the rest, it's not really what baseload energy can achieve.
In 1923, American industrialist and father of the international motor vehicle industry, Henry Ford, built South Africa's first car factory in Port Elizabeth. Today, 49 international motor vehicle brands operate in the country, with the industry dominated by seven, including Toyota, Volkswagen, Isuzu, and of course, Ford. But in the midst of long daily power outages caused by corruption and mismanagement at South Africa's coal-fired power stations, production of motor vehicles is dropping fast. The CEO of the National Association of Automobile Manufacturers, Mike Mabasa, spoke recently at a panel discussion in Johannesburg.
If you look at cities like East London, where Mercedes-Benz is currently located, I can put my last Zim dollar on the table and say to you with a very clear conviction that should Mercedes-Benz close shop, East London is dead. It's a ghost town. Because that economy, East London, is anchored by the automotive industry.
Before the long electricity breakdowns hit last July, South Africa-based manufacturers were preparing to produce electric vehicles, the cars of the future. The country is the world's biggest platinum producer, an essential component of the best electric car batteries. Mabasa says experts advised the state to build a battery manufacturing facility in Rustenburg, the northwest city at the center of South Africa's platinum sector.
We have an opportunity to turn Rustenburg into a mega factory for battery technology, for the world's batteries. But unfortunately, Morocco has now established a mega gigafactory for battery technology. They actually came to South Africa, took some of our best engineers and took them there. They announced ahead of the curve that they're going to build the biggest gigafactory for battery technology in the world.
This loss, says Mabasa, is a direct result of South Africa not having enough electricity to power big industry, which in itself has sprung from government corruption, incompetence, and mismanagement of the state electricity company. If the energy crisis persists, says Mabasa, South Africa is not going to be the continent's top vehicle manufacturer much longer.
The other African countries have seen that gap. I've given you an example of Morocco. You look at Egypt, you look at Ghana. The Egyptians are even more aggressive. One of our best engineers is now CEO of Nissan in Egypt. The Egyptians came and said, Mike Whitfield, come, we want you here. We want you to come and build Nissan in this market. Tell us what you want. What is your price?
Mabasa says lack of electricity means South Africa's motor industry cannot capitalize on its traditional strengths, which include a sector that's had more than a century to develop, highly skilled engineers, and easy access to metals. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg. VOA.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One of every three employed women work in the agricultural sector or some agriculture-related activity. However, according to a new report from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, globally there is a 24% gap in productivity between women and men farmers on farms of equal size. That's because in many countries, gender-based discriminatory practices prevent women from contributing equally to the agri-food sector. Women are paid 20% less than men. They do not own land in equal proportion to men, lack access to necessities such as high-quality seeds, irrigation, and fertilizers, and face discriminatory laws and practices, says the report. But in this day of increasing food insecurity, closing the gender gap in farm productivity and the wage gap in agricultural employment could increase global gross domestic product by nearly $1 trillion and reduce the number of food insecure people by 45 million. Women use fewer inputs, so they produce less. It's that simple, said USAID Administrator Samantha Power, quoting the author of a 2011 FAO report. Speaking at the U.S. launch of the FAO's Status of Women in Agri-Food Systems report, she said that although there has been some progress since then, it's not nearly enough.
If we are to see real progress, we do have to double down on our efforts to address systematic barriers. The laws that prevent women from owning land or operating bank accounts, or the norms that dictate that it is women who must care for children and homes.
Administrator Power then introduced USAID's new initiative, Generating Resilience and Opportunities for Women, or GROW. Through this program, she said, USAID will work with the U.S. Congress to double the funding to women across agricultural and food systems to $335 million.
We are going to help women build resilience to economic shocks that may make seeds and fertilizer unaffordable. We will support women to take on economic roles off the farm, and we will work to direct resources to women in humanitarian crisis zones.
GROW will provide the resources to address barriers, including laws that prevent women from fully participating in or equally benefiting from agricultural and food work, said Administrator Power. There are hundreds of millions of women who are ready, willing, and able to help us end hunger, if only we dismantle the barriers standing in their way.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.